9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
American voters are preparing for a worse economy in 2023, a Journal poll finds. Plus, Congress approves a 10% increase in U.S. national security spending. And we'll look at why China's leader is doubling down on his long-term bet on Russia.
Xi Jinping needs Russia to be on his side as he gears up for greater competition with the United States.
It's Friday, December 16th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. More than a third of American voters say that inflation is causing them major financial strain, and a majority think the U.S. economy will be in worse shape next year than it is now. That is according to a new Wall Street Journal survey conducted between December 3rd and 7th, the results of which suggest that a recent burst of positive economic news, including moderating gas prices and a slowing pace of inflation, haven't altered the perceived risk of a recession. The U.S. Senate has passed a more than $850 billion defense policy bill. The latest version of the annual National Defense Authorization Act would increase the total U.S. national security budget by roughly 10% compared to last year, and the bill now goes to President Biden's desk for signature. Separately, the Senate voted to extend current government spending levels by a week in order to give negotiators more time to craft a full-year omnibus spending deal. President Biden is also expected to sign that bill, which will extend government funding through December 23rd and would avoid a partial government shutdown this weekend. Japan says it will sharply raise defense spending, including for missiles that it says will be able to hit other countries. That announcement came via a long-awaited military strategy document which labeled China as Japan's biggest security challenge, a shift from a 2013 document that listed North Korea as the top threat. Wall Street Journal Tokyo bureau chief Peter Landers has more.
The Constitution of Japan says that Japan should not wage war, and even says Japan should not have military forces, and they've eased away from that for more than 70 years now. But this is a big step forward, saying that they can actually have missiles to attack other countries if they believe those countries are about to attack Japan. The Japanese public has shifted its view in the last year, especially after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which showed the kind of threat that Japan or places nearby like Taiwan could face. So in general, polls show that a strong majority of Japanese support increased defense spending, although some aspects are still controversial.
The European Union has signed off on $19 billion of new funding for Ukraine next year after Hungary backed down from threats to block the EU proposal. The EU has faced pressure from Kyiv and Washington to step up funding for Ukraine, which is struggling to maintain basic services and facing continued Russian attacks on its infrastructure. And social media company Twitter has suspended the accounts of several journalists from publications, including CNN, The Washington Post, and New York Times, without publicly specifying why. Representatives for the outlets said they didn't receive any explanation of why the accounts were suspended. Twitter's head of trust and safety, Ella Irwin, declined in an email to comment on specific user accounts. For years, the blockchain technology underpinning Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies have been viewed by some companies as a way of driving industry-transforming projects. But so far, that hasn't happened. And last month, yet another major corporate blockchain initiative involving IBM and global shipping giant Maersk was discontinued. And joining us now with a look at why blockchain may not be living up to its potential is Wall Street Journal enterprise tech reporter Isabel Bousquet. Hi, Isabel.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's our pleasure. So tell us, why are companies seeming to move away from the blockchain now?
The bottom line is that these ambitious, big enterprise blockchain projects, especially those designed to track assets through really complicated supply chains, only work if you have critical mass of participation from everyone in the supply chain. And that is just something that's been really challenging to get. The Maersk IBM project didn't get that. Other projects are also struggling to get that. And if you have one person in your supply chain who doesn't understand what blockchain is, doesn't have digital records, just does not want to play along with this, the project doesn't work. And so I think that's something that a lot of these big, ambitious projects are finding. And I think the problem with a lot of companies approach this is, hey, there's this new technology, what can we do with it? Rather than, we have an actual business problem we need to solve with this. They have ways of tracking assets through supply chains. They have shared databases that can do the same thing you can do on blockchain in a cheaper and more simple way. So for those reasons, I think a lot of companies just aren't even looking at doing this kind of thing anymore.
Isabel, from what we can tell now, what does the future for enterprise blockchain actually look like?
I think it's clear that interest is waning in these big, ambitious projects that we're going to revolutionize and transform industries all at once. I think it will be in smaller, less ambitious use cases with fewer participants. There was an example of some seed distribution from the government in India to some farmers that was working because the supply chain there was just a lot simpler. So I think there is potential for some of those smaller projects to work. But I think on a large scale, the bottom line is critical mass of participation is just not something that's been able to be achieved so far.
That was Wall Street Journal enterprise technology reporter Isabel Bousquet joining us today from New York. Isabel, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you again.
Coming up, we'll hear from the journal's chief China correspondent about a recent decision by President Xi Jinping to deepen China's ties with Russia and what that could mean for Beijing and Moscow. We'll have that story after the break.
Technology can make the world better. At UST, we're building a future where people everywhere are empowered to live better lives.
It's transformation you can feel.
And you don't have to do it alone.
We believe in the power of technology to transform businesses and build a better world.
After spending much of the last year putting distance between Beijing and Moscow, Chinese President Xi Jinping is behind the scenes deepening his long-term bet on Russia. Wall Street Journal chief China correspondent Lingling Wei says that President Xi has long admired Vladimir Putin, but that his decision to strengthen ties between the two countries only occurred in recent weeks. And Lingling joins us now with more on this geopolitical pivot and what to make of it. Hi, Lingling. Thank you for being with us.
Great to be back. Thank you.
Tell us about this change that you say has occurred in recent weeks. What's going on in Beijing?
Sure. So as you pointed out, in the past few months, Xi Jinping definitely has made some effort in terms of trying to create some space between Beijing and Moscow over Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Especially, we have seen him publicizing his position against the use of nukes in Ukraine. But really, what's happening behind the scenes is that he has instructed his government to craft an economic plan that basically will further deepen the economic ties between China and Russia in terms of trade, in terms of joint partnership in energy projects in the Russia Arctic zone, in terms of more China investments in Russian infrastructure, and also in terms of both countries using their local currencies more in their cross-border transactions. So that could help them reduce any kind of future sanction risks from the West. But how do you square what's happening in public and what's happening behind scenes? By publicly stating that China opposes the use of nukes in Ukraine, trying to create some kind of space between Beijing and Moscow. Xi Jinping is showing that he's getting the upper hand in this China-Russia relationship. At the same time, Xi Jinping sees the value still in having Russia as a partner. Economically speaking, China needs a lot of energy resources. This puts China in a stronger position in this bilateral relationship. So they need Russia in there. And more importantly, strategically speaking, Xi Jinping needs Russia to be on his side as he gears up for greater competition with the United States.
Lingling, why now for all of this? Is it clear what's driving the timing behind this on President Xi's part?
Well, Xi Jinping, really, until recently, he hadn't been out of country for 3 years. And because of China's zero COVID policy, its alignment with Russia, the country really had become increasingly isolated on the world stage. So he definitely had an incentive to break this kind of isolation, especially after he secured another term in office in October. So that was the political calendar cleared out. He's in a better position to do that. At the same time, China still needs to have a stable relationship with the West. And some Chinese officials have told me, you know, they've given up hope in terms of having a better relationship with the United States. However, they still are hopeful that some of the U.S. allies in Europe, like Germany and France, they would still be adopting a more pragmatic approach to their relationships with China. Because China still needs Western technology, needs access to Western markets in order to realize its ambition of becoming the world's largest economy, overtaking the United States.
Let's jump over to what Russia gets from deepening this relationship with China. In particular, might it help them sustain the war in Ukraine?
Sure. China has no interest in seeing Russia collapse, right? And it really has thrown economic lifeline to Russia. And going forward, as Russia keeps getting weakened economically, at least from Western sanctions, from its own battlefield defeats in Ukraine, Russia's position in this bilateral relationship would just become weaker and weaker. That opens up opportunities for Chinese money, Chinese energy firms to swoop in to build up more projects, energy and some other type of projects in Russia that could put China in a much stronger position in this relationship. To some extent, could potentially even make Russia China's vassal state.
Finally, Lingling, has there been any response that you've received from either Moscow or Beijing on your reporting?
Oh, sure. Obviously, before we published the story, we saw comments from both Beijing and Moscow. And China's foreign ministry in a statement to us said, China and Russia are comprehensive, strategic, cooperative partners of each other. The development of bilateral relations is based on the principles of non-alliance, non-confrontation, and non-targeting of third parties. That's the Chinese statement to us. The Kremlin press service didn't respond to our request for comment.
Lingling Wei is the Wall Street Journal chief China correspondent. Lingling, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for having me.
And finally, long gone are the days when advent calendars used to count down the days until Christmas only contained images, poems, or if you were lucky, tiny little chocolates. That's because now the Yuletide arms race is on, as brands compete to offer novelty advent calendars containing everything from beef jerky to miniature jams, cosmetics, or even wine. Wall Street Journal Future of Everything editor Catherine Dill explains why brands keep on adding their own calendars into the mix.
Well, a lot of them, I think, probably feel like they need to get in on this trend. Like, if you don't have one, why not? It's a great way to reach people in these little ways and create this sort of frenzy. The Jam calendar has become so popular that it becomes available in August now. And there's also a couple of very famous cosmetic brand calendars. And it's a great way for people to get these really expensive cosmetics, 24 sample sizes, at a bit of a discount. And it may introduce them to a product then that they continue to buy at full size.
And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.